What's good, guys? It's Johnny Manziel, and you're listening to the Sleeper Wire Podcast.
Welcome everybody to the Sleeper Wire Show. Today we have an awesome show for you guys. We're going to talk to Dr. Jesse Morse about some of the injuries to some big names so far this training camp and other injuries going into the 2019 season. And we also have a special Sleepers Breakouts and Busts that we recorded live from SportsCon in Dallas. But first, I am your host, Professor Chris, and with me today, Dr. Jesse Morse. You may have heard him discussing injuries in other podcasts. He's the host of the Injuries 101 podcast and the host of the Fantasy Doctors. You can follow him on Twitter at Dr. Jesse Morse. Dr. Morse, how's it going, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I'm so pumped for you to be on the show.
I'm happy to be here.
Yep. So what are you working on right now as we get closer to the season?
I am ramping up a huge injury draft guide. Think of literally taking one player and going back from when they started playing football, as long as we can get records, analyzing every single injury, what other sports they played, do they have high pedigree, what type of players were they playing behind? Did they come out of nowhere? Were they a five-star recruit forever? And doing that for all of the major injuries. There's going to be between 50 and probably 65 players. The top 15 running backs will all have their own article out of the top 30. There's just a ton of work that has gone into this. And it's currently only available for $5, believe it or not. But next week that's going to double. So if you're interested, you might want to go check it out. That's at thefantasydoctors.com.
$5, huh? That is actually really cheap for the amount of effort that goes into something like this.
Yeah, I wanted to make it reasonable. It's like, you know, like I could have made it $50, but how many people are going to potentially spend that? You know, obviously my time is valuable, but this is what I like to do in my free time. So, you guys are getting a little perk. I mean, I'm a sports medicine doctor in the day, so I make well over $100 an hour. So obviously this is thousands of hours or thousands of dollars worth of content, so to speak, if you look at it from that context, but I don't look at it that way, at least not right now.
Well, that is awesome, man. That's such a service to the fantasy industry for putting it out for such a low price.
Hopefully you all enjoy it.
All right, well, let's go ahead and jump into some of the key injuries so far, and we're going to kick it off with AJ Green. So on Sunday, it was reported that AJ Green has torn ligaments in his left ankle, and he's expected to miss 6 to 8 weeks. Now, for someone who has 13 documented injuries, and that was according to Sports Injury Predictor, since the 2009 season that either forced him out of games or forced him to miss multiple games or the rest of the season, this doesn't look good. I will say this is his first torn ligament in his left ankle injury. He's basically injured everything else. But going into his ninth season, he's only played a full 16 games, 4 of his 8 seasons. How serious is this going into 2019?
So based on what we know, which is always the issue here, he either suffered a grade 2 or a grade 3 ankle sprain. I'm going to differentiate between the two so you get an idea of what we're looking at. A grade 2 is a partial tear of the ligament. A grade 3 is a full thickness off the bone tear. Think of ripping something that's supposed to be attached to a dock, like a boat dock, and then ripping that thing completely off it. Not going to get it back attached or function. The most common injury in all of sports is a lateral ankle sprain of the outside part of your ankle. You roll your ankle, you trip your ankle, your body weight brings you forward, it rolls and tears the most common ligament, the ATFL over there. A classic grade 2 for a lateral ankle sprain takes anywhere from 3 to 6, 7, 8 weeks. The problem is these guys need to run on it daily, they really need to be able to adjust, land on other people's feet, push off the line, have crazy footwork, not be in the best field conditions. So ideally, he comes back for week one, but I wouldn't hold my breath for that.
So do you think maybe by week three he should be back? Because he's going to miss all of training camp and all of preseason. So give me an optimistic return date.
Based on what we know now, and it sounds like he's getting a second opinion, realistic would be week two or three.
Okay. So is he someone that you're staying away from in fantasy drafts, or is he still going to be maybe worth his third round ADP?
So the issue I have with him is, as of right now, I mean, I'm one of the types that I draft as late as I can, like literally the weekend before season kicks off. Like, right. I need to know all of the injuries. I don't like anything coming back to bite me in the preseason after I already have my team, because I don't usually play for free. I play for money. So if I'm going to lose money if someone gets injured and it's a big injury. So with that being said, my suspicion is his ADP is going to dramatically rise, probably over the next couple of weeks to a month, probably into the fourth, maybe even fifth or sixth round, because you're just going to completely forget about him. You're going to know he's on the mend. You're going to hear that he's probably back between one, two, and three. The one caveat is that he may go on the PUP list. If he goes on the PUP list, he's out to, well, I believe it's at least week six. That means that obviously he's gonna lose a lot of value, because he's maximum playing, you know, 10 games max. So if that happens, I don't want anything to do with him regardless. But if that happens, obviously his value takes a significant hit. There's a lot of moving parts in this offense that has potential. Zach Taylor, it looks like he could do good things for this offense. But at the same time, I don't trust A.J. Green. He's aging. He already just had a season-ending toe injury, which is a big deal. I'm not overly worried about that anymore. But now he's got another injury that may have been compensatory as a result of the toe not being 100% yet. So he's just too high risk for how much draft capital you have to, you know, pay for him, so to speak.
Now, if he does end up on the PUP list and misses those 6 weeks, when would you take him, or are you staying away from him completely? Would sixth round be too early for him?
There is, so the way I've looked at this draft is that bell cow running backs and top five tight ends are rare. You have to chase those early or you're going to miss them. Wide receiver is really deep this year. You have your five, six guys that are at the top, your OBJs, your Adams, your Julios, your D-Hops. But then after that, there's a lot of guys that have a tons of potential, and I'd rather have one of them, like a Godwin or there's a bunch of guys who like Mike Williams. There's a bunch of guys that have a lot of potential that have much less risk, in my opinion. So I'm just going to stay away from him.
All right. Untouchable, huh?
Unless he's like 12th round or something stupid, but that's not going to happen.
So you're not drafting him as a starter and then holding him on the bench for 6 weeks. You might draft him as your fourth wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, I love his talent, and he was a potential sleeper/steal before the injury, but now it's just too risky, in my opinion.
All right, well, let's go ahead and move on here. Damian Williams, someone that I have been very outspoken against, especially at his ADP, injured his hamstring on Sunday. He sat out of practice on Monday. I know that soft tissue injuries and, you know, like mild hamstring tweaks are fairly common this early in training camp.
Oh, yeah.
But how serious is this for a guy who's never had more than 50 carries in a season?
Yeah, so here's my issue in general. The hamstring injury is notorious for re-injury. Why? Any muscle that expands or crosses over two joints is prone to strain. The hamstring is probably the most common. The calf is the second one. So when you have this, even a grade one, which is the mildest that you can technically get, these take 2 to 3, 4 weeks to heal, like completely heal. We saw last year with Leonard Fournette. We saw last year with Dalvin Cook. These guys suffered an injury. They came back probably sooner than they should have, and then they suffered a re-injury and were out for even farther, or at least Leonard Fournette was. So that's the issue I have, is that these guys need to listen to training staff. They need to be smart about it. Their jobs are not in jeopardy. They if they're talented and they're healthy, they're going to perform. So if this is a grade one and he's back in 2 to 3 weeks and he's like legit back in two, that's fine. I'm not worried. But if this is like a grade two and he tries to make it like pretend like it's a grade one, I'm concerned, because then he's going to probably re-injure it in the first couple of weeks. And then all of a sudden he's out for the first 4 to 6 weeks. And then do you have another Leonard Fournette situation on your hands? But you spend a lot of money to get him, or capital to get him, and then he doesn't really do anything for your team.
Now, we did a great debate. It's one of the little mini shows that we did. We did one about a month ago. That was Damian Williams versus Nick Chubb. Who would you rather have in the second round?
So I've been doing a lot of research the past couple of weeks, and my concern with Chubb, I really like Chubb. I'll start with
same.
That. But my concern is that I don't think he's going to get enough targets, and I predominantly pay PPR. Their offense has the potential to be scary, in a good way, the Browns, in addition to the Chiefs. But I think Williams has a better chance to get targets. I know he hasn't played a ton, and he's been in the league for over 5 years, and he really hasn't. Besides last year showing up, he really hasn't done anything that's impressive. Chubb, on the other hand, has been a stud since he was in high school. Like him and Sony Michelle, I think it was Sony Michelle, were in the backfield together, and they just kind of tore it up. So like he's been around forever, good forever. The concern I have with Williams is this minor injury, and then he's got a couple of guys lurking. He's got Hyde, he's got the other Williams, he's got the rookie Darwin, I think his name is. Chubb doesn't really have the same competition. Duke's banged up with his own hamstring, so it's like I'm not really worried about Duke's playing time. I'm just worried about his volume in terms of targets, and if you're even getting 30 to 50 targets and catching 60-70% of those, that's going to add a lot more points than if you weren't catching them at all, like a Sony Michel, or like a Chris Carson, who doesn't catch any balls at all. They're just strictly runners.
So given what we know now, a lot of people have already drafted. A lot of people are, you know, drafts are coming up. If you were drafting today, where would you feel comfortable with Damian Williams? Because I've always been on the opposite side of the fence. I do not like Damian Williams. He's never been good enough to overtake the starter. He's always relied on, you know, injuries to the starter in front of him, which is exactly what's happened every single time he's started. Aside from when it was him and Kenyon Drake, he got the job over Drake, but then lost the job to Drake. So he's never been good enough to take over the starting job. Carlos Hyde, on the other hand, is a very capable running back, and people forget that just 2 seasons ago he caught 59 passes. He's a great pass catching back, and there's this whole narrative that Carlos Hyde can't catch, but he proved it 2 years ago when he finishes the RB7 in PPR. He is just an all-around really good running back. Now, I would much rather have Carlos Hyde in the 10th than Damian Williams in the 2nd. I've said that since Carlos Hyde signed there, I like him more later than Damian Williams. Given what you know now, is the 2nd round too early for Damian Williams? Because I thought it always was.
I mean, I see what everybody's excited about. I personally won't be doing that. The guys I like around him, Joe Mixon, top 5 talent. He has ridiculous potential this year if that O-line can do something. I don't know what's going on with Melvin Gordon. I like him, but the contract scares me after we know about Bell last year. Cook, Dalvin Cook could be a monster this year. Not overly concerned about the ACL. You can read that in my profile. And he's 2 years out. That's usually when these guys are mentally back to 100% in terms of their ACL. Aaron Jones, maybe too much smoke, but maybe there is a little fire there as well. Not touching Fournette, too risky for me, even though the talent is there. There's no question about that. I do like Mac. I think Mac has a lot of potential. I'm a little concerned about the way they play when they're down versus up, the Colts. And that's really kind of where I'm at in that area. Henry, I like. He doesn't catch any passes. Jacobs obviously has a lot of potential. I don't know what crazy Gruden's doing at any given time. I want nothing to do with Devonta Freeman, 10-foot pole. Still wouldn't draft him in the eighth round. I want nothing to do with him. I don't trust him.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Are you listing off guys that you would take over Damian Williams or just around Damian Williams? So you maybe take him like later in the third, early fourth?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he's there in the late third or fourth, then he's definitely of value. I would not touch him. I just wouldn't reach for him. I guess that's probably a good way to put it.
Yeah, he will be on none of my teams this season. I don't believe it. Not buying it. You spoke about Henry just a few seconds ago. You mentioned him. Derrick Henry injured his foot on Friday. He's been in a walking boot. We don't have, at least I haven't seen a ton of news on this. Have you heard anything more about it? It's his ankle, right? His left ankle?
I don't know. We don't know. We literally have no idea. They have not told us a single thing. All they said is they're not concerned. That's
okay.
It. Okay. I mean, if I were to guess, if I were to gauge, it's not an Achilles because that's concerning. It's not a high ankle sprain because that takes 4 to 6 weeks. It's not a foot injury because those are usually concerning. So that means it's probably a lateral ankle sprain, just a grade one, like a mild one, which is not a big deal and not overly concerning. If he's in the boot for more than a week, then I'm getting a little concerned.
Yeah, you did tweet out some analysis on Twitter that you were not concerned about this. So given the lack
based on what
of
they're
bad
telling
news,
me.
It wasn't super concerning. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I didn't see the injury.
Well, we have going.
I mean, that's the problem. It's like, yep. I'm not evaluating these people. I'm not getting their x-rays. I'm not reading their MRI. Like, I have limited resources, but based on what I know and what they're telling us, I'm not concerned at this time. I have him in a league, the only league I've drafted, and I'm not worried. Melvin Gordon, on the other hand, I am worried.
Henry or Williams? I lean Derrick Henry all day.
PPR, I'd probably consider Williams, but based on what, if they can do what they did last year with Henry, man, he was unbelievable.
Oh, he's awesome.
I mean, I know he's not a pass catching back, but man, he was ridiculous. And he's just like, he's huge. So, I mean, it's like, if they can somehow manage to do that again, I mean, he's going to be a monster.
Do you ever see that picture of him standing next to Deion Lewis?
Yeah.
Just the size difference.
It looks like he's next to a five-year-old. Like, it's crazy. Yeah, I mean, Deion Lewis, we know he's the shifty scat back. I'm a Patriots guy, so I remember him from our days with us. But, I mean, and he's the one who's going to get the targets. But if Henry runs like he was running at the end of last year, man, he was putting up monster performances.
Yeah, those 4 weeks at the end of the season were the reason he finished as the RB16. You know, he was on pace to be like in the 40s.
Yeah, I mean, he just put up ridiculous numbers. I don't know if that's sustainable. That's a different story.
Yeah, he was absolutely horrible. I like him a lot more than Williams. I would take him in the fourth round for sure. Got some more guys here to talk about. Let's move on. Sterling Shepard, he had the chance, or he might still have the chance to be the New York Giants wide receiver one this season. It's not starting off well for him, though. He did break his thumb in practice on Thursday. There's some hope that he'll be ready for the start of the season, but he may miss a game or two. The Giants have just their wide receivers once again decimated. Corey Coleman's going to miss all season with a torn ACL. Golden Tate's been suspended for the first four games due to violating the NFL's performance-enhancing drug policies. Mm-hmm. He does think he's going to win it, but if he doesn't, given what we know about Sterling Shepard with that broken thumb, is he a guy you want to draft? I mean, if he's starting week one, he's basically the only wide receiver there aside from, you know, Evan Engram, who's a tight end.
So coming into the season, you could get Sterling Shepard as the team's wide receiver one, probably, I don't even know where his ADP was before the injury. I don't expect it to change dramatically. Right now he's sitting in the eighth round. He had wide receiver one potential. He had, I believe, well over 100 targets last year with OBJ there. They really don't have anybody else to throw to besides Saquon and Engram. Am I concerned about the thumb? Nah, not really. I mean, weird how three people broke their thumb in a matter of like 4 days. Him, who is it, Mariota, somebody else, not Mariota, RG3. Excuse me, and then Edelman. So there's a couple ways to break your thumb. You can break the tip, which is what it sounds like RG3 did. You can break the base, which is more common, or not, you know, not more common, but more concerning. And then you can actually have what we call an avulsion. So if you tear the ligament on the inside of the thumb, closer to your second finger, sometimes that ligament will pull off a piece of the bone along with it. That usually requires surgery. The fact that none of these three had surgery means that it's probably not that one. It's not a major concerning fracture at the base, which usually turns into two or three pieces, which is super concerning. And that also requires surgery. So the fact that this is like what we call a non-displaced fracture, he'll be pretty much normal in 4 weeks. They'll probably wear a brace for a while, but I'm not overly worried about it.
All right. So maybe week one, would you take him in the eighth round?
Yeah.
Okay. I like it. So those were the main four injuries that we've had to start training camp, but there's some other guys who have been injured for a while who I want to talk about. So Carson Wentz, he has a ton of weapons this season. The Eagles have absolutely loaded him with everything that he's going to need. You got Miles Sanders and, you know, Jordan Howard in the backfield. He's Alshon Jeffrey, Nelson Aguilar, DeSean Jackson, Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert. He's got every chance to thrive this season. Tell me about his injuries, though.
So here's the issue I have with Wentz. We know he's a stud. We know he's always been kind of a stud at quarterback, at least. He's had a couple of weird injuries. He broke his wrist in his last year at NDSU or North Dakota. Came in. I was watching the play on TV when he suffered that ACL tear. So in that season, he was like MVP potential. Like he literally, there was a good chance if he continued the same path, he was probably going to win it. Like he looked incredible. But here's the issue: we know that he tore his ACL. We know that he tore something called the LCL, which is the ligament that runs north to south on the outside of the knee. When you combine those two ligaments and you tear them both, the average return to play is about 12 to 15 months. The LCL is not a very common injury in general. That means you have to get hit on the inside of your knee and push it outward, as opposed to getting hit on the outside of your knee and pushing it inward. That's where an MCL would be. So as you could tell, it's not a very common injury. So it's kind of hard unless you were like planted in front and then someone hit your knee from the inside without your other leg being as far out. The issue with that is that the outside back part of your knee is something called the postlateral corner. Very important structure. And it needs to be completely 100% if that knee is ever going to be really 100% ever again. If there is any sense of the term that this postlateral corner was injured, and there's several small little ligaments and tendons in this area that need to be addressed, if that is injured, that needs to be surgically repaired. So I'm assuming they did, but sometimes they don't. They assume it's okay and they go along with the LCL and ACL, but they don't address these small little ligaments that are vital. If he did have a postlateral corner, that is 18 months return. He returned in 8 months.
So that tells you that's not what it was.
Well, either that or they rushed him back. That's the other possibility, is that if they rushed him back. So if you look at his yards per yards rushing before his injury, he was pretty respectable. I mean, he's not a runner, but he was agile and he could get out of the way for something in the fours. When after his injury, he was in the twos. He didn't have that mobility. He didn't have that quickness. If a would-be sacker is coming to get you and you don't feel confident in your knee, you're probably not going to be able to move as quickly as if you did feel confident in your knee. And with that being said, that's probably how he suffered that fracture in the back, because he has a fracture in one of, likely they haven't told us, but based on what we know and how not concerning they are, he had something called a transverse process fracture in the back, which is one of the bones that goes kind of horizontal. And that's what Derek Carr had a couple of years ago, if you all remember. And he said it took him like well over a year to like kind of feel normal again. So if I was on staff for the Eagles, I would have been pretty concerned, and I would have probably shut him down for the whole year after that, because I didn't think the knee is 100%. He doesn't have the lateral agility and mobility that he wants. And that is potentially putting him at much higher risk for other injuries. So I know he has all the weapons he could possibly ask for. But the problem is he right? Will he ever get back to that MVP form? I don't know. I'm skeptical, unfortunately.
Well, right now in 12-team PPR leagues, he's going as the seventh quarterback off the board at the 802. Right behind Drew Brees, he's going a little bit ahead of Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton. Would you take those guys ahead of Carson Wentz this season?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Kyle Murray could be a monster in that crazy offense. Brees, I have in one league. He's been downtrending because of how much they're running. Matty Ice, I think, is a potential monster this year. Baker, we know, is going to be good. Russell, they run too much. I don't know what to make of the Seahawks. Like, Russell is good, but if they're running that much, how much is he really going to get? Cam, we can talk about this if you want, but he has a shoulder injury that I'm not overly worried about. Goff, I don't know what's going on with him.
Last time Cam had this shoulder injury and surgery, he was the number one quarterback the following season.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably his only season ever. he's not much of a thrower. He's more of a kind of a runner slash right. Gap back guy. But I'm concerned, out of all the quarterbacks that have potential, I'm most concerned about Wentz for his injury history.
All right.
I guess I'll just put it that way.
I like it. Let's move on. Darius Geis, he had that torn ACL last preseason, right? It was preseason, not training camp. Then he had, what was it, four different additional surgeries for infections?
Correct.
On it? So how do you feel about Darius Geis going into the season? Because another one of the things that I tweeted, this was along with my Carlos Hyde belief. I tweeted that Carlos Hyde and Adrian Peterson were going to be the steals of this year's draft. And we don't really hear a whole lot of positive news about Geis, so I feel really good about AP going at the end of the 10th round.
Yeah, I'm super concerned about Geis. I love his ability. He reminds me kind of like a Zeke without his receiving abilities, I guess you'd say. But the problem we have is that not only did he suffer his ACL tear, but the subsequent setbacks led to a lot of issues. If you get an infection in and around your knee or wherever, we know that he had an infection in his body that required 7 weeks of IV antibiotics, which is like they basically put an IV in your near your bicep, and they send you home, and then they have a home health nurse come in every day and give you a shot of antibiotics that lasts the entire day. And they did that for 7 weeks. So
Wow. Here's
the issue. If his ACL graft was put in before that, how strong is it, and are there any concerns with it? You can't put it in while you're getting antibiotics, because that means the graft would be at risk for being infected. So you have to wait until after the infection clears. Either way, he is limited during those entire 7 weeks for A, rehab if he's already had it in, or B, he can't start rehab because he hasn't got his new ACL yet. So there is like almost a 2-month timeline that is just completely delayed from his surgery. So he at the start of week one, he'd be about a year out if everything went perfectly. We know it didn't go perfect. So at best, he's 8-9 months out, maybe. But throw in the fact that he's already had a hamstring strain that shows you he's not properly conditioned, and the hamstring is a protector for the ACL. These are all red flags for me. I want nothing to do with him this year. He's going to be too expensive for what he's going to be able to bring, and he's at too high risk for re-injury. Next year, different story, but this year I'm definitely concerned about him.
So not touching him this year?
No, unless he was like in the 13th or 14th round, something like that, like I would consider. But I mean, Adrian Peterson, besides his money troubles, he's still got some left in the tank, which astonishes me, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
But
1,000 yards last season.
I mean, so like that's kind of the way I look at him. Like they didn't sign him again to ride the bench. Like he's gonna
Right.
get looks. You know, Chris Thompson's gonna get catches. So Life Love is probably not gonna play because he tore his ACL in January. So that's gonna take at least 8, 9, 10 months to at a minimum to come back. So that's probably pup list. So, you know, that leaves Perrine, AP and Geis, you know, for running.
I can't believe Geis has got a 702 ADP.
Yeah. I mean, he's
That's
really high. People
ridiculous.
really like him. But to me, he's too high risk, and I've just told everybody, temper your expectations. I love his running style, but I just don't think he's ready yet physically.
So I drafted him. I've got a keeper league where you can keep two players and you have to keep them two rounds ahead of where you drafted them the previous year. So you must have drafted them. I took Geis in the 15th round just so I could throw him on my IR and then keep him this year for a 13th. Would you be willing to take that 13th shot on him, or would you look elsewhere?
What are your other options in the 13th,
Was it just my
hypothetically?
particular team in general? I know I have better options. I was just saying for those who may be have the option to keep him later. In the 13th
I
round,
mean,
we've got guys like Devin Singletary, Kalen Ballage, Justin Jackson, who's probably going to rise, Nyheim Hines, Deion Lewis.
so the only one out of all those, and I'm a little biased here, is Devin Singletary, only because he went to undergrad about 45 minutes south of me, which is my undergrad, and I think
Okay.
he's going to take the backfield in Buffalo. But everybody else, no, I would take Geis over them.
Gotcha. That's why I'm a huge Willie Snead fan. We both went to Ball State. So,
Yeah. I mean, I watched him a lot of games, and he was a beast, man. The Singletary was like he was crazy. He was like a joystick. It's like, yeah. So people are going to see. They'll see when this year. They're like, where did this kid come from? He was ridiculous.
So, Singletary or McCoy?
Oh, Singletary. McCoy's
All
done.
right.
He doesn't have the he don't have the legs anymore. It's all right. I mean, he had a great career, but
He did. He's oh, where's that ADP? I just saw it in there.
he's gonna be falling.
LeSean McCoy.
9, 902 in PPR.
902 PPR. Yep, I guess we're looking at slightly different lists, but yeah, so I see 905. Yeah, ninth round. So yeah, I might take a shot on Singletary later as well. Chris Carson, he gonna be back and ready to go?
Yeah, not
Okay.
concerned. Suffered a little meniscal injury. So the meniscus is essentially the cartilage in your knee that is a protective thick layer that helps you basically your knee function. So it's the protective layer for your knee. It's kind of like the shocks for your knee instead of like the shocks for your car, but they're for your knee. And the issue with the meniscus is that you don't it doesn't heal well like in anybody. It just doesn't have a good blood supply. So if you tear it, think of it as almost like a piece of paper and then ripped a piece of paper. So it will never really go back to being a perfectly good piece of paper, but it will it can kind of settle down and be okay. If that piece is flipped up and angry, so to speak, that's when you have to go in and remove that piece and kind of smooth out the edges. That's what Sony Michel had past year. That's what Mixon had this year, and that's what Carson had in the offseason. Very common. Just the nature of running backs, unfortunately, these guys are prone to that. If you guys want to look it up, just Google arthroscopy knee meniscus, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. It looks like
Okay.
a frayed piece of rope, kind of.
So nothing to concern ourselves with Chris
No,
Carson. Seems ready to go.
I drafted him in one league. With that as like probably the number one or number two, depending on where Baltimore falls, rushing offense, and he's one of the two guys. Kind of think of him as, you know, is he the Ingram with a more role to Penny's Kamara? You know, possibly. So I like him. I think he's running hard. I'm not overly worried about his knee.
Well, Chris Carson is currently going at the 506 according to Fantasy Football Calculator in a 12-team PPR. Right after him at the 507 is Sony Michel, who's also struggling with some arthritis issues, right?
Similar, yeah, probably. I mean, I can't speak to his arthritis. I wouldn't be surprised if he definitely had some in his left knee. He is a little more worrisome than Carson, but the Patriots love to run the ball. They were third last year in total rushing attempts. They drafted Damian Harris to and as another big body to rush. I mean, Sony Michel came back after his knee scope, or two. He's had three, at least as far as we know of right now. And he rushed. He had a heck of a rest of a year. He had impressive playoff numbers. I mean, they rode him hard all the way to the Super Bowl. So I'm not overly concerned about Sony Michel. The issue with both Michelle and Carson is that neither catch passes. So, in a PPR league, you mean that's where they kind of take a little bit of a hit, as opposed to a Mixon or maybe a Cook, a Mac to a little bit lesser extent, carry on. Those guys get a little bit of a bump because they still get some passes, whereas Michelle and Carson are probably not going to catch any passes, so they take a little bit of a hit.
Yep. Last player I want to talk about here is Deonta Foreman, and this is just, you feel so bad for the guy.
Yeah.
That Achilles injury, they're so hard to come back from. Do we really have any players who have come back from an Achilles injury and been studs?
Not in football. Not
Yeah.
in running backs. So Richard Sherman, I believe, had bilateral Achilles tears in surgery. But in terms of specifically running backs, these guys really struggle to return. It's really hard to come back from. They just can't seem to get that same burst. While there's something to be said, there is a newer procedure called a PARS, PARS, that has shown promise, but we do not have a single running back that has suffered the injury and came back and been dominant as expected. After returning. So maybe he's the first one, but I'd prefer to go with the rule as opposed to the exception.
I like it. All right, guys, that's all we have time for. Dr. Jesse Morse, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you, follow you, and support you?
Sure. My easiest and most direct way is probably on Twitter at Dr. Jesse Morse, just kind of how it sounds. I do Instagram a little bit, but I don't really follow it as much. For our fantasy doctor's account, it's the fantasy DRS on Twitter. Our website is thefantasydoctors.com, and that draft guide is really it's kind of instead of throwing darts at a wall and hoping that you're lucky with injuries, be informed. I told everybody about Andrew Luck's concerning shoulder before he sat out the entire year. I told everybody last year that Leonard Fournette was rushing back and he's probably going to have an issue, and he ended up having an issue. So, like, some of these injuries are predictable. Some of them are freak, and it is what it is. So,
Those two would have been worth the $5 alone.
yeah, I mean, I put a lot of time and effort in this because it's my passion. But at the same time, it definitely injuries play a big role, and every team deals with them, and every fantasy team is going to deal with them. So, why not be ahead of the curve as opposed to behind it?
Absolutely. All right, Jesse. Well, thank you a ton for joining us again. We really appreciate your time.
No problem. Thank you, guys. Let me know if you have any questions. Take care.
Now let's move into our sleepers, breakouts, and busts as we are joined by John Chapman from the Eat Sleep Fantasy Podcast. You can find him on Twitter at JL_Chapman. And Prophet Hoos is going to
Hey,
give you
everybody,
his sleepers,
this
breakouts,
is
and busts as
Professor
well
Chris
as
of
myself.
Sleeperwire and John Chapman of the Eat Sleep Fantasy Football Podcast. And we are here at SportsCon recording a live sleepers, breakouts, and bust show. It is loud. It is hopping. You're going to hear a lot of background noise, but we hope you'll be able to hear us clearly because it's going to be awesome. John, how are you doing tonight, man?
Man, this is awesome. The energy at this place is unbelievable. And I do have to say, we have the best booth. And so it's going to be great all for the rest of the day. And then obviously draft night out is going to be amazing tonight as well.
All right, so like I said, we are doing Sleeper Breakout and Bus Show. It's going to be awesome. So we're going to have a few different guests on. John, who absolutely killed the Stranger Stats episode. Well, we had 24 questions, and you got, what, like 18 of them right?
Yeah, it was a good time. I unfortunately I'm a big nerd, and that always hurts me, but it helps me in the podcast world, so I'll take it.
Yeah, it was awesome. There were a couple questions where you realized everybody else was so far behind. You're like, you know what? I'm going to back out. I'll give you guys a chance to catch up.
You got to do that with George sometimes, man. He's such a nice guy. You got to help him out. Love you,
well,
George.
They were fairly difficult, some of them, but you killed it, man.
Yeah, well, so that's the thing. Yeah, we're jumping into sleepers, breakouts, and busts, and these are kind of the hot topic kind of button words that are used all the time, but these are the ones that are going to make you not lose your fantasy league and also help you to win it. So we're going to help you dodge some of those landmines and help you find some of those diamonds in the rough.
Absolutely. So like I said, you'll hear a few different people's sleeper, breakouts, and busts, and it's going to be us to kick it off here. And John, I'm going to kick it off to you to start. Who is your sleeper for the 2019 season?
So a sleeper is somebody that you're going to get later. So these aren't the big prominent guys going into the top, you know, 5-6 rounds. These are the ones that, let's say you go heavy on running back early on in the draft, you're going to have to find a wide receiver that's going to start for you that you might be getting in the 10th or 11th round. And right now for me, one of my favorite wide receiver sleepers is Kiki Kuti for the Houston Texans. Drafted last year, he was a rookie, had some major injury issues. However, when he was involved, he was so heavily targeted. And a lot of the people out there are saying, yeah, but what is it going to look like if Will Fuller is healthy, which he has never been, and DeAndre Hopkins? Is there enough stuff to go around? Well, luckily for us, we have a sample size last year where all three wide receivers were in the game at the same time, and the target share went DeAndre Hopkins, 39, the number one overall wide receiver. Will Fuller had 19 targets, and Kiki Kuti had 30 over that same time. So is Kiki Kuti going to be a number one wide receiver, a top 12 finishing wide receiver? I don't think so. However, if your scoring format is half-point PPR or PPR, this is a guy you could start in your wide receiver three or flex spot whenever he's healthy with confidence, because he has such a high target share that he's not going to have a low floor scoring game. And with his speed and that offense, it could go a long way. I love Kiki Kuti, and he is going in the 11th round, his average draft position right now. So absolutely love that guy.
That is much more involved than I expected you to go into. I'm not going to have that much detail since we have a bunch of people on this show.
I'm sorry.
You're good. I love it. I love it. Before I get into my sleeper, I just want to point out that we have a few guys right behind us. We'll tweet out a picture. We'll take one here in just a second. So here at SportsCon, right behind our booth, is a little football field that they've laid out. Two of our guys, Jason and Lucas, you guys have heard them on plenty of shows, are about to catch passes from Vince Young.
SportsCon's awesome, man. Yeah. Only here could that stuff happen.
Melvin Gordon walks right by our booth. We have a signed Melvin Gordon jersey just sitting here. We're doing the great debate later this afternoon, Melvin Gordon versus David Johnson. Guys, it's going to be awesome. But let's get back to the show. So my sleeper is Adrian Peterson. I can't believe that this guy is going in the 10th round in standard or PPR. He's going super late. He had over 1,000 rushing yards last season. In standard leagues, AP finished as the number 16 running back. Now, I know there's the whole argument that Darius Geis isn't there and that he's coming back this season, but his recovery has been long and painful and not positive. He actually, like, just yesterday, news came out that he slightly pulled his hamstring. So he is still not good to go. I picked Adrian Peterson up in the Scott Fishbowl as soon as I heard that news, because that's only good news for Adrian Peterson. You can get a starting running back who is going to put up multiple 100-yard games, multiple touchdowns. I have 8 to 10 touchdowns for AP on the ground. He is going to be awesome, and getting him in the 10th round is superb. Let's go ahead and move to our breakouts. John, who is your breakout for 2019?
You know, the breakout players, usually you want to go with the younger guys, especially at the running back position, because they jump in and they have such a high volume and success rate in their first and second or third year in the league. For that reason, I'm going Kerryon Johnson. Again, if you are in a scoring format that has half-point PPR or full-point PPR, this is a guy that can crush it. Because I understand that they have C.J. Anderson and he's going to get some goal line work, but the volume that this guy is going to get with the Detroit Lions, that entire offense is going to go through him. And again, He's going in the fourth round, and this is a running back that's going to get 60 catches, and if he just gets a little bit of the goal line work, not even all of the goal line work, this is somebody that will be not only a, you know, top number one running back, top 12 running back, he could be top five. So Kerryon Johnson is a breakout player that could just dominate and one of those guys that can win your fantasy league, especially if you go wide receiver early. You want to jump up and get Kelce or Mahomes early. Kerryon Johnson is a guy I'm targeting in every single league just because the volume dictates success in the running back position, and he has all of it. So very excited about Kerryon Johnson.
Getting into my breakout, someone who's going in the fourth round right now, so I think we're kind of expecting it, and it's someone who I've never, ever liked in the past, but I do love him this season, and that is Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry had an awesome year, or finish to the year last year. He had, you know, week 14, 17 carries, 238 yards and 4 touchdowns. 33 carries in week 15, 21 carries in week 16. They finally figured out that they need to give Derrick Henry the ball, and he absolutely exploded when he did that. He was a top five fantasy running back over the last 4 weeks of the season, and I think the Titans know what they have in him now, and they're going to continue to use him. He finished as the number 13 running back in standard leagues, which is about where he's going in ADP. He's not going as a running back one. He's going as a high running back two, which is absolutely appropriate, and I think he's going to explode this year.
Hey, I won a league because of that guy. It was disappointing almost all year, but whenever he went bananas at the end of the year last year, I mean, oh my gosh, if you got into the playoffs and you had Derrick Henry on your roster, you totally killed it. I love that pick, man.
Let's move into our bust here. John, kick it off.
All right, man. We didn't go over our list beforehand, but my bust has to do with Adrian Peterson and what you talked about earlier. I think you hit it right on the head. Darius Geis is an absolute bust right now, and that was even before the soft tissue injury with his hamstring. There were major question marks on Darius Geis, his availability week one, not even for training camp, but for week one coming off that ACL tear. There were some complications there. So not only is health a concern before this week, that just got magnified big time. And on top of that, Jay Gruden loves to use a third down specialist running back. So if you look at what Adrian Peterson did last year, when Chris Thompson was healthy, he loves to have a first and second down banger, bring in a third down running back. And that is one of the biggest committee backfields in the entire NFL. You have Adrian Peterson, you have Darius Geis, Chris Thompson will have a role, and then they go in draft after they have all three of those guys signed, Bryce Love. So you're talking about four running backs that are going to demand volume. I just think that the ceiling is so low on Darius Geis. So, again, that noise, Pete Rose is literally next to us right now and drawing a huge crowd, so sorry about that. But stay away from Darius Geis. Again, he's going in the fourth or fifth round and just cannot return that value. That is his ceiling as long as Adrian Peterson is there.
All right, and finishing up my bust here, you guys who have listened to the Sleeper Wire show have heard me talk about this. He was someone I debated against in the great debate, and that is Damian Williams. I do not like Damian Williams. I know there's been a lot of news recently, actually I think just yesterday, that you know he thinks he's going to be the lead dog. But guess what? He's never had more than 50 carries in a single season. I know he exploded last season at the end with Pat Mahomes, but guess what? Damian Williams is not the only guy there anymore. They brought in Carlos Hyde, who is a very capable running back. He is not one of those who excels at any one thing, but he is just good at everything, very similar to Frank Gore. And I don't know where this whole narrative of Carlos Hyde can't catch comes from. He's only two seasons removed from having 59 catches when he finishes an RB7 in PPR. That's awesome. They are going to use Carlos Hyde. Damian Williams has never been good enough to overtake a starter. He's always had to rely on injury or suspension. I think taking him in the second round is going to be a huge mistake. I would much rather have Carlos Hyde in the eighth than Damian Williams in the second. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick pause from doing sleepers, breakouts, and busts while Hoos is finishing up his bust here, I think. right next to us for any baseball fans. We have two booths over. Pete Rose is on a radio show right now. They're recording loudly right next to us, which is totally cool. And then at the booth right next to us, baseball fans, Delino DeShields from the Texas Rangers is hanging out right next to us. We need to snap a picture with him. That's going to be awesome. I can't believe everything that's going on here, man.
Here's the thing. We have a 5-on-5 flag football game going on with Johnny Manziel versus Vince Young, and two of our writers and friends are out there catching passes from, you know, college football's, man, some of the best quarterbacks in the history of the game at college level, not NFL. But this is a blast, man. If you guys are in the area, in Dallas or whatever, you got to come out to this. It's an absolute blast.
Yeah, man, draftnightout.com. By the time you hear this show, it's going to be too late to buy tickets, but it is going to be spectacular tonight. Live drafting. We got food. We got drinks. It's going to be amazing. We're going to be playing golf. We're going to have trivia. Maybe we can get Delino over here and say a little recording. Hey, this is Delino DeShields, and you're listening to Eat Sleep Fantasy. This is Delino Shields. You're listening to Sleeper Wire. That would be awesome. He what?
This is a paid thing with SportsCon. He's got his shirt on. Yeah, take the mic over there. How long's the rehab?
I don't know, man. I don't know. That'd be cool. I wonder if there's a little break, if we could get him to say that. That would be spectacular. Let's see what else we got going on. Oh, you guys who listen to the Draft Night Out show, Fletcher's Original State Corny Dogs is here. We got to meet Amber, the head person over there. It was delicious. Their jalapeno cheese corny dog was amazing. They've been doing this since 1942. That's pretty cool. Tons of good food here. We're giving away some awesome merchandise tonight. We've got Troy Aikman signed jersey, Davante Adams signed jersey, Melvin Gordon signed jersey. We have a Juju Smith-Schuster football that is pristine. It is going to be amazing. And Prophet Hoos is walking back up for his sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So obviously you know mine, so I don't have to go through mine again. Hoos, who is your sleeper?
My sleeper is going to be Quadri Allison. You don't know who Quadri Allison is. It's a rookie that's going to probably go undrafted. He's for free. Ito Smith is not going to get the job done. Devontae Freeman is likely a goner. And while I'd like to see Devontae Freeman do well, we haven't seen him do well in quite a long time. He should break out. Not break out. He should have a great season. But we just don't know. And there's not much depth behind there. So you're talking about Quadri Allison stepping in, big beast of a back, and possibly stepping in and being an RB1. He's going to have that opportunity. So, yeah, he's my sleeper. He's so cheap. It's insane, the value of this guy. No one's really discussing him. He needs more loves, hugs, and kisses.
I mean, this dude is free right now.
Yeah, he's free.
Let alone cheap. He is 100% free.
He's free.
Yeah. This is not the deep sleepers episode. All right, let's go ahead and get to your breakout.
My breakout's going to be Geronimo Allison. G-Mo, yes, not MVS. MVS is going to do all right. But Geronimo Allison, man, he averaged about 14 points, which is good for about the wide receiver 23, I believe, last time I checked. That's a wide receiver 2 for you. And he's not free. He's getting some hype. He's getting a lot of love. I like it. But that guy's going to break out. He's going to get an immense amount of targets. Rodgers loves him. He's going to play in the slot. There's no Cobb there. I just think he has a great opportunity to step in right away and kind of step in where he left off last year before he got hurt. If you go back and look at his numbers, he was just the most reliant. And he had about 11 targets while he was healthy, I believe, in week 3. So, I mean, if you're getting targeted from Aaron Rodgers 11 times, that's just insane. I mean, Davante Adams is going to eat. But Geronimo Allison, get that guy on your football team.
Yeah, I think that's a great call. Before we get to your bust, Hoos, I just told you about this. Guys, I want to let you know, Lucas, primetime himself, just caught a diving catch for a touchdown in flag football from Vince Young. 40-yard bomb, diving catch in the end zone. Just ridiculous. It was beautiful. All right. Yeah, there's so much going on here. This is going to be a huge pain in the ass for a producer to edit. It's going to be awesome. All right, let's get to your bust here.
I am sorry, but my bust is Antonio Brown. He's still going high in drafts. He's on a new team. New guy in offense. I love his work ethics. I love everything about Antonio Brown. I don't mind him, his antics. I don't mind any of that. Overall, Derek Carr, I'm not going to bash Derek Carr too much, but we've seen him have a number one wide receiver, and he just didn't target him as much. He's not going to see the target share that he saw in Pittsburgh. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger threw, I believe, the most passes last year. He's not going to get that from Derek Carr. He's not going to get that many attempts. He's not going to get that many targets. He's going to see his targets drop from, 180 last year to about 130. Still solid, but it's Derek Carr. You know, I mean, he's not the most efficient guy, and they added Tyrell Williams. Tyrell Williams is pretty much like Michael Crabtree, if you ask me. So you got Michael Crabtree, Tyrell Williams, and you got Amari Cooper, Antonio Brown. Obviously, Antonio Brown is Antonio Brown. He's huge. He's amazing. But in a new offense, I'm sorry, he's going to bust for you. He's my bust.
I did get him at the 303 in the Scott Fishbowl. How do you feel about that?
I do like him at 303, but I don't think – I mean, we're talking about a super flex-heavy, weirdly premiums. You're not going to get him in at 303 in any redraft league. You're going to have to pony up. You're probably going to pay for him. And he's going to go most redraft leagues in the first round at the end of it or at the top of the second round. Maybe you get him in the middle of the second round, but it's going to be tough. You're usually going to have to pay a premium on Antonio Brown because he's Antonio Brown.
All right. Well, thank you, Hoos, for hopping in.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, that's it for the show today. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Sleeper Show. You can follow me on Twitter at Prof_ChrisSW. And you can also find me on the Sleeper app at Professor Chris. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll catch you next time.